I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. The New York Times story about Donald Trump claiming $916 million in losses on a 1995 tax return has dominated the news. He said he was smart to take the tax deduction. Hillary Clinton raised the issue at a campaign stop in Ohio this week.
Then you all know that in the debate, he said it was smart to avoid paying taxes. Yesterday, his campaign was bragging it makes him a genius. Here's my question. What kind of genius loses $1 billion in a single year?
Governor Chris Christie, who was part of Trump's campaign, was a lot more charitable when he was interviewed by Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday.
What it shows is what an absolute mess the federal tax code is. And that's why Donald Trump is the person best positioned to fix it. There's no one who's shown more genius in their way to maneuver around the tax code and to rightfully use the laws to do that. And he's already promised in his tax plan to change many of these special interest loopholes and get rid of them so you don't have this kind of situation. And I think the worst part, Chris, is this is the tax code that people in America suffer under every day.
Our guest, David K. Johnston, is an authority on the U.S. tax code and has been following the career of Donald Trump since the 1990s when he was the Atlantic City bureau chief for the Philadelphia Inquirer. We asked David to join us to talk about his years of covering Donald Trump, which he writes about in his new book called The Making of Donald Trump, and to talk about our tax system that is so friendly to real estate developers. David is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, also wrote for the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times. He's now a columnist for the Daily Beast and for Investitopia, and he joins us by Skype. And David, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Well, thank you for having me. And by the way, I've covered Trump since 1988.
All right. We like to be correct on Radio Times. Has this ever happened where an individual takes a tax deduction of almost $1 billion on 1 year of tax return?
Well, maybe. We don't know. But it's important to understand what happened here with Donald Trump. The tax code is a mess. And I'm actually, my next book is I'm drafting an entirely new federal tax code called the Prosperity Tax for the 21st century economy. But Donald Trump, in all likelihood, got this huge deduction called a net operating loss from two things. One was his mismanaged businesses, which were losing money. The Trump Shuttle Airline alone was probably several hundred million dollars of losses. He bought, you may recall, 23 jets with an average age of more than 20 years each, and the business failed because he tried to raise prices by saying, well, you get a gold buckle on your seatbelt and a gold sink in the restroom. And the second element is that when Donald Trump could not pay his bills in 1990, even though he claimed, depending on which day of the week it was, to be worth $3 billion or $5 billion, his bankers had to take a haircut. The New Jersey Casino Control Commission took Donald Trump's side against his bankers, and they had to write down their loans. Well, that's called income by Congress. If you borrow money from a bank and pay back less than the amount of the loan, anything you don't pay back, unless you go through bankruptcy court, is income. What Trump did was take advantage of something called the exception provisions in Section 108 of the tax code. Instead of paying the debt, he agreed not to take future deductions for depreciation on his casinos and some other buildings. That is, he transferred this obligation over to there and altogether ended up paying no tax on his haircut and benefiting from these losses. His casino company, he then created in 1995 a publicly traded casino company, the only time he's done any publicly traded company. The company went public at $35 a share. When it eventually went bankrupt, the shareholders never got any money because the company lost money every year, $1.1 billion before it went out of business. But Donald Trump got $82 million.
Let me pick up on several things. And as you say, our tax code is a mess, and I don't think anyone would disagree or argue with you about that. But why has the tax code, and this is something I think we have learned in the last couple of weeks, why is the tax code so generous to people, not just Donald Trump, but people in the real estate business?
Well, the real estate business has lobbied for years with Congress to get special favors. And Ronald Reagan's 1986 Tax Reform Act removed a lot of the favors for the real estate business. But in 1993, Congress put back new ones. So I was a landlord at one time, and I had to quit for two reasons. I'm under the alternative minimum tax, and you get no benefits at all from investing in real estate if you only have losses, as most early real estate investors do. And Congress also says that if you're a married couple or single, doesn't matter, and you make more than $100,000, the tax benefits begin to go away, and at $150,000, they're wiped out. For more than 99% of Americans, the maximum tax benefit from being a landlord against your other income, like salary or business profits, is about $6,000. But if you're Donald Trump and a very narrow group of other wealthy Americans, you may take unlimited real estate deductions, wipe out your income from, say, a television show and royalties for neckties made in China and furniture made in Turkey, and you obtain from the government essentially a zero interest loan equal to the income taxes you don't have to pay. And why do we do that? It makes no sense whatsoever, because real estate is an unproductive asset. You might be able to make a case for this if we were talking about factories or research facilities, but real estate, it makes no economic sense, and it's a drag on our economy.
Is it, though, the impact of the influence of lobbyists who go to Congress? I know that Donald Trump lobbied as well. I'm sure other people in the real estate business who have a lot of money sent folks to Congress to get this generous benefit.
Right. And of course, Donald Trump has said repeatedly that he gave campaign contributions to get politicians to give him things that he wanted. In New York City, where his father had great influence, when Abe Beame, his lifelong friend, when his father had as a lifelong friend Abe Beame, the mayor of New York City, Trump remade the Commodore Hotel in Midtown Manhattan into a Grand Hyatt. It was a $100 million project financed entirely with borrowed money. Trump didn't have a dollar in the deal. He got $400 million of welfare. Well, if you could do a business deal where you don't have any money at risk, the banks have all the money at risk, and you get four times the cost of the deal as welfare from the government, you think that might sort of make you pretty well off too?
Let me quote something that Donald Trump said earlier this week. He said, "I was able to use the tax laws in this country, my business acumen, to dig out of the real estate mess. Few others were able to do what I do." There was also a press release or a campaign release. "Mr. Trump is a highly skilled businessman who has a fiduciary responsibility to his business, his family, and his employees to pay no more tax than legally required. That being said, Mr. Trump has paid hundreds of millions of dollars in property taxes, sales and excise taxes, real estate taxes, city taxes, state taxes, employee taxes, and federal taxes." What do you say to that, David K. Johnston?
You notice he didn't say income taxes. First of all, let's deal with Donald Trump's claim that he's a tax genius, and Chris Christie saying he knows more, so much about the tax code that he can fix it. The other night, Lawrence O'Donnell and I interviewed on national TV Donald Trump's tax guy, Jack Mitnick, who's a lawyer and a CPA. And he said it was his ideas. Donald followed his lead. He said that the only serious questions that he was asked were from Donald's then-wife, Ivana, about their tax returns. I had lunch with Donald Trump in 1990 and gave him some tax advice, and he couldn't follow it. Donald Trump says that he's this great genius, but in my book, The Making of Donald Trump, I quote what he says under oath when he's asked about a very basic concept in finance. My students, my third-year law students and graduate business students at Syracuse University, at the snap of a finger, could answer the question Donald Trump asked. The answer he gives, and I quote him at length, is gibberish, and it tells you he doesn't know that. When he was negotiating with his bankers, some of them have talked about how, and this is in 1990 when he was collapsing, they came to realize he didn't understand what was going on, and they concluded they had to deal with his front person, Steve Ballenbach, who went on to be the CFO of Disney and the CEO of Hilton, if I remember his job titles correctly, because Trump didn't know anything. And that's a recurring and important theme to understand. Donald Trump claims to know things, but when he's asked questions in the national debates, on radio shows, and under oath by people who know how to ask questions, his responses are gibberish because he really doesn't know anything.
But as a businessman, is it unusual to have either an accountant or even a lobbyist who essentially takes care of business for you?
No, that's the normal way of doing things. And the only issue here is Donald's false claim that he was the tax genius here. As I said, when I tried to explain to him that he had taken he showed $3.4 million of negative income on his 1979 tax return and $400,000 the year before. The last year we know, Marty, that he paid income taxes was 1977. And over lunch, I tried to explain to him that if he reorganized his partnerships and gave, for example, his then general counsel a larger stake, he had a stake of about 1/1,000th of one of Donald's deals, that he could effectively sell these tax losses to somebody else and make some money off it because he only had to report a dollar of negative income. In fact, he could actually report a little positive income and pay no income taxes. And he couldn't follow the steps because he didn't understand the tax code.
I wonder whether, and obviously we only have a couple of pages from a 1995, so 20-year-old tax return to deal with. Can we extrapolate, David, what people's either saying on the one hand, what he said was perfectly legal, or raising questions on the other hand?
Well, we can tell a great deal from those three pages. And the reason Donald Trump will never show us his tax returns is people like me would immediately reverse engineer them and tell you how much he's really worth, or pretty close to it, what his sources of income are, and we'd be able to tell you a great deal about how deeply he is entangled with the Russian oligarchs from whom he says he's gotten tens of millions of dollars, and he has, and whose fortunes and even their lives depend on their fealty to Vladimir Putin, a murderous autocrat who literally got the Duma to pass a law allowing him to kill people outside of Russia, as he's done. Donald Trump's tax return for that year tells us, first of all, he's no billionaire. There's no evidence that he's even worth $1 billion. The income that he shows suggests that at most he owned about $150 million worth of bonds, corporate bonds. If he bought deeply discounted junk bonds, it could be far less than that. Now, if you're a swashbuckling entrepreneur, why would you put your money in the most conservative investments around corporate bonds? They show his business income was $3.4 million. If you're a billionaire and you're just earning a 5% return, then your businesses should be throwing off $50 million. So there's no evidence in those returns that he's a billionaire, Marty.
Well, hold on. We need to take a very short break. That's David K. Johnston, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. He's got a new book, The Making of Donald Trump, and he has been covering Donald Trump, as he told us, since 1988. He was Atlantic City bureau chief for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He now is a columnist for The Daily Beast and Investopedia. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. If you're just joining us, David K. Johnston is our guest on the show. He used to write for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He now is a columnist for the Daily Beast and joining us on Radio Times to talk about Donald Trump. He has been following the business operations of Donald Trump for a number of decades now. His book is called The Making of Donald Trump, and you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. David, let me just read a couple of comments. One from Andrew: nothing on the FBI's bogus investigation to cover up criminal corrupt crony queen and her enabler, Obama. We did talk about the FBI's investigation into Hillary Clinton. A comment from Gene: so no Democrat uses the tax code to avoid paying more taxes than they need to. A loss of $916 million would have triggered an audit from Hades for sure. I don't see the IRS going into Willie Nelson punishment mode. Bottom line is that if you're wealthy and you don't have a tax team working to take full advantage of every tax deduction, you are stupid. What do you say back to Gene?
Well, first of all, the government did go after Willie Nelson And his accountants argued that, well, they put him into illegal tax shelters. He was better off with the settlements he got than if they hadn't, so that they shouldn't have to pay anything on his behalf. But, you know, there's an op-ed in the New York Times today by the chief ethics officers of both the Obama and George W. Bush administration saying that Donald Trump wouldn't even be considered for any post, including sub-cabinet posts, that would require Senate confirmation, because you have to have your tax returns scrutinized and examined. And if you're doing public service, you shouldn't be bragging that you're not paying anything into the government for which you're doing public service. And the other, whoever said it, is quite right. I mean, all people take advantage of the tax code, and there's nothing unpatriotic about doing that. What Donald Trump did was quite different, though. It's important to understand that I have shown in the making of Donald Trump committed sales tax fraud. There are badges of fraud in Donald Trump's 1984 federal income tax return from sworn testimony by his own tax guy. Donald Trump has told property tax officials that he's told the public that his golf course in Los Angeles is worth $250 million, but he's told property tax authorities it's only worth 10. He's told property tax officials, the public, that his golf course in Westchester, New York is worth more than $50 million, but he says to tax authorities 1.3. And we also know that Donald Trump in the past has filed two different sets of documents with the city of New York to shortchange the city of New York money that it was due and benefit himself. So there's a big difference between you taking a mortgage interest deduction or a charitable deduction and the things that Donald Trump has done.
One thing, though, and this is reading your book and what other people have written, it seems that he has had a number of enablers in his life. His father certainly set him up and bailed him out several times. You've got banks who are doing the same thing. Even the New Jersey Casino Control Commission back in the 90s knew he was in deep trouble, and yet they helped him out.
That's right. And in fact, two of the Casino Control Commissioners in 1990 said publicly there was official favoritism to Donald Trump. And in the making of Donald Trump, I go through and show this official favoritism that took place. I'm sure many people listening to this are having a hard time reconciling what I'm telling them with what they've gotten from the news. And the reason is that my peers in the news business have done a terrible job of telling you about Donald Trump. So I hope listeners understand I've been doing investigative reporting for 50 years, and every one of my stories has held up, and many of them people found hard to believe at the time, like when I revealed that the LAPD had undercover officers in Moscow and Havana. And police chief later in his autobiography said, I had undercover officers in Moscow and Havana. Everything in the making of Donald Trump comes from the public record, from court cases, from his own words, from letters he wrote. And I have a massive collection of Trump documents. And so what Donald Trump all the way through his career has done is he's been masterful at being a salesman. He's an incredible salesman. And he's been masterful at shutting down or compromising law enforcement investigations, including the New Jersey Attorney General's Division of Gaming Enforcement. He hoodwinked them into approving him for a license without fully checking him out. And their bureaucratic imperative after that was to protect themselves from their own mistakes by not asking questions that would embarrass them and cause Trump to lose his casino license.
Is it also, though, intimidation, as you write? I mean, he certainly has used lawsuits. He's been sued a lot himself. But is there also some level of intimidation going on? And I'm just I'm trying to understand how a bank gets intimidated by even someone like Donald Trump.
Well, in the case of the banks, Trump simply threatened to tie them up for years in litigation. Donald Trump, through a company, hired 150 to 200 illegal immigrants to tear down the Bonwit Teller department store in New York City by hand, without hard hats, without safety equipment, and they were to be paid $4 an hour. They were so bad off that they slept in the middle of the winter in the building they were taking down. Trump cheated them out of part of their wages. I'm not the one saying that. A federal judge after a trial concluded that. These workers fought for 18 years and never got fully paid. Well, if you're a banker and you know that Donald Trump fought for 18 years not to pay people their full $4 an hour, imagine what he would do when the bankers have given him loans totaling more than $3 billion. So they compromised with him. And when the New Jersey Casino Control Commission took his side, which makes political sense, then they had to cave in. The Casino Control Commission essentially told his bankers, you can foreclose on Donald Trump, and if you do, you will have lovely hotels by the seaside, but not casino licenses, even though the law says they could seize the properties, have them continue to be run by a trustee, and then find a buyer. And once they took his side against his bankers, who, after all, this is a fight between a major New Jersey employer and bankers located primarily in New York, London, and Germany. What do New Jersey politicians care about those guys compared to people in the state? The bankers had to cave, and they did. The other way, they also had to extend him tens of millions of dollars in new loans and more loans after that. Now he can't borrow from American banks. He's borrowing instead from the Bank of China, which is owned by the communist government in Beijing through one of his business entities, from Deutsche Bank, which he's tried not to pay back. And Deutsche Bank is one of the biggest promoters of illegal and quasi-legal tax shelters in America. And currently, you'll notice they're in big financial trouble. The German government's trying to rescue them.
I do want to pick up on that. But just based on what you just said there, David, then maybe Donald Trump is a genius.
Well, if he is, he's not the kind of genius who we want to have. He's not someone who builds businesses. Donald Trump's basic business deal is he gets fees up front. He never had a dollar invested in Atlantic City. It was all negative investment. He got paid up front or borrowed all the money and took a fee. He then drags cash out of the businesses as fast as he can. And when they fail, he leaves behind the mess. And then he goes on to make another deal. And he's done this repeatedly throughout his career. It's extraordinary that there are more than 4,500 lawsuits he's involved in by, you know, small businesses, including a number in Philadelphia, who never got paid fully for their work, for workers who weren't paid, from people who put money into what they thought were Donald Trump buildings, and it turned out he'd merely licensed his name, and in some cases, he had the right to remove his name at any time and put up a building next door, which would undercut the value of their investment, having paid a premium price for it. And the other business deal, Marty, that I think is really important is to understand that Donald Trump has been very deeply involved throughout his life with vicious felons, convicted felons, and a major cocaine trafficker for whom he risked his casino license. He tried to lie and cover up about it, but he got his helicopters for his casinos and the management of his personal helicopter from a mob associate, a convicted embezzler, who was a really big-time cocaine trafficker. And he sought mercy for this man. Somehow, mysteriously, this man's case, Joe Wechselbaum, when he pled guilty, was transferred from Cincinnati, Ohio, to Judge Marianne Trump Berry, Donald's sister, in federal court in New Jersey.
I'm sitting here nodding my head, David. Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's David K. Johnston, author of a new book called The Making of Donald Trump. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter. He used to write for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's written for the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times. He has known Donald Trump and has covered Donald Trump since 1988. He's a columnist for The Daily Beast and Investopedia. He's got a book he's working on. He mentioned that. It will be called The Prosperity Tax, an entirely new federal tax code for the 21st century economy. And I do want to talk about that. Let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Dr. Dave, somebody or other from Winmore, to join our conversation. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
David, I'm curious why you think that the charges, such as the ones you just made about the mob, et cetera, and his dealings with China and Russia, have not really been played up in the mainstream media. I've seen you on MSNBC, and you lay out a lot of very interesting claims, but I don't really hear that followed up in the mainstream media in any real significant way.
What do you make it? Yeah, David, Dave, thanks for calling in. David, go ahead.
Well, Dave makes a very good point here. And so first I want listeners to know that in the 50 years I've been doing this, every single investigation of mine is held up. And I'm not making claims. Everything I'm telling you is in the public record. And the back of my book has 44 pages of notes, so you can look up where I got the information. My peers in the national press have done a terrible job of vetting Donald Trump. I'm sure there are listeners saying, well, they didn't vet Barack Obama. Well, yes, they did. I can tell you his kindergarten classmates, his high school classmates, women he dated in high school, in college, their names, we know all of them. He's been thoroughly explored. You just may not have read the material. But in Trump's case, there's this robust public record. And while the Washington Post has done some very good stories, mm-hmm. some of which relied on documents I gave them, and overall, nobody has been digging into this. And I think part of the reason is the American news media really doesn't feel comfortable and never has writing about mobs, whether they're Russian mobsters, American mobsters, Dominican mobsters, doesn't matter who it is. The American news media has never been comfortable, with a few rare exceptions, like George Anastasia at the Philadelphia Inquirer, writing about organized crime.
Are you saying that Donald Trump is? Are you saying though that Donald Trump is a mobster, or that he has had ties?
No, Donald Trump is somebody who has done business with mobsters repeatedly. He's had them on his payroll. They have been his business partners. His father's business partner was Willie Tomasello, who is identified in law enforcement reports as a front for the Genovese and Gambino organized crime families. But Trump is someone who does business with these people. And when other New York developers ran to the FBI and Rudy Giuliani and said, please get the mafia out of our pockets, Donald Trump embraced these people because it made him money. When there was a concrete strike in New York, and concrete was a mobbed up industry, every construction site in New York stopped except Trump Tower.
He has sued a number of journalists. Has he ever sued you or threatened to sue you, David?
Oh, he threatened to sue me repeatedly at the Inquirer and the New York Times. He called me at home this April and told me if I didn't write it the way he liked it, he would sue me. And I have to tell you, from the Santa Cruz, California City Council to the White House, no politician has ever said that to me except Donald Trump. It would have been unimaginable to me that any other candidate would do that. I mean, that doesn't mean I haven't had politicians snarl and be unhappy and complain to bosses, not about my facts, but they wish I hadn't written the story I wrote. But nobody except Donald Trump threatens to sue. And he has said, we're going to change the libel laws and get rich suing these journalists. He has said you shouldn't be able to write things about him that he doesn't agree with. That's not how the democratic society works. That's not how the First Amendment was written or its purpose. Donald Trump basically sees the office of president as a dictatorship. If he were asked in the debate tomorrow by a citizen, where would you find the job description for president of the United States and what are the duties, powers, and limits of the presidency, he would not be able to tell you.
Let me pick up on something, and you mentioned he has said actually that because he knows the system and has used the tax system to his benefit, he is in a position to be able to institute some kind of tax reform. Now, broadly speaking, he's talked about doing away with the estate tax if he becomes president. He's talked about lowering the top income tax rate, I think down to about 33%, something like that, and also reducing the business taxes down to something like 15%. Based on what you know about the tax system, who benefits from this? And would this in any way get to what we've been talking about, this $916 million tax deduction?
Right. Well, we want to have a tax code that encourages investment and encourages people to take risks. Donald Trump's original tax plan, vague as it was, the conservative anti-tax tax foundation concluded that it would add a minimum of $10 trillion to the federal debt, now about $19 trillion, over the next 10 years. The much more respected Tax Policy Center, whose computer models have proven to be highly accurate, came up with a slightly larger number, 11 to 12. The latest Trump tax plan, the Tax Foundation says, would be about $4 trillion in added federal debt. And Trump's tax plan would primarily benefit people at the very top. One of his proposals would create a huge new tax benefit for child care that wouldn't benefit the people listening to this show. But if you're wealthy enough to have, say, three nannies and fly your children around first class to your various mansions, Donald Trump would make all of that tax deductible. In fact, it's not clear if he means tax deductible or a tax credit, but he would create a tax benefit for people like that. Donald doesn't know the tax code. Jack Mitnick, his advisor, and his subsequent advisors, they know the tax code. Donald Trump has no idea how the tax system really works. And in the making of Donald Trump, I cite multiple examples of his testimony under oath on various issues that show that he doesn't know how things work. It's astonishing to imagine this. But when I arrived, Marty, in Atlantic City, his competitors told me, Steve Wynn, clearly someone who knows what he's doing, other executives and some of Trump's own guys, that Trump didn't know anything about the casino business. And I was like, that's not possible. That's absurd. And then I started interviewing Trump. He didn't know anything about the business. He didn't know the odds. So there's a chapter in my book about Akio Kashiwagi, the biggest gambler in the world. $14 million an hour he gambled for almost a week straight. I watched him. And Trump lost money on this guy because he mishandled him, because he didn't understand the game, the odds, customer management, anything. And by the way, the guy also ripped him off for $500,000 of chips. And I was the guy who figured it out, not Trump's people.
Okay, David, let's take another short break. David K. Johnston is our guest on Radio Times. He has been covering and writing about Donald Trump since 1988. Back then, he wrote for the Philadelphia Inquirer, was the Atlantic City bureau chief. He's also written for the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times. He won a Pulitzer Prize, now a columnist for the Daily Beast and for Investopedia. Author of a new book called The Making of Donald Trump. And you can join our conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Much more to talk about after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen talking with David K. Johnston, author of The Making of Donald Trump. David, this is something that Hillary Clinton has said. We played a clip earlier in the hour, essentially, how does someone lose money in the casino business? Now, he did have three casinos that he opened in the 1990s. Was that part of his problem? And also looking at Atlantic City today, I mean, it is a shadow of its former self.
Well, Donald Trump, when he had one casino, did quite well, the Trump Plaza. He then began competing against himself. And he actually at one point had four casinos. They built a walkway across the convention center from Trump Plaza to the old Atlantis, which, like its mythic namesake, had sunk beneath a sea of red ink. So they could claim that the casinos were connected. But by competing against himself and creating more gaming space than the market could absorb, he damaged his own business. And he could have addressed this by doing something called market differentiation, appealing to different audiences at different properties, but he didn't do that. Trump mismanaged his properties. He had some highly competent executives killed in a helicopter crash. He then had some other competent executives whom he replaced with yes men. And by the way, the guys who were killed in the crash, after they were dead, he threw them under the bus. He said, well, the reason my casinos aren't doing so well is they didn't know what they were doing. He also withdrew cash as fast as he could from the casinos. He didn't reinvest the way, say, Harrah's did, and didn't develop customer management systems. And he was awkward with a lot of customers. Steve Wynn would come up to you when he had a casino and say, Marty, I'm so thrilled that you're here and you're such a good customer. And listen, I want to personally present you with a key to one of my suites as a courtesy to you because you're such a good customer. Donald Trump would turn the conversation, because I watched him do this a couple times, into how great Donald Trump is.
Let me get some more callers in on the conversation. We have James calling us from Westtown. James, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, two things. First of all, David should be the next moderator. And second, Forbes magazine just published The Richest People, and they stated that Donald Trump was worth $3.4 billion and that his net worth went down $800 million since last year. but they say he's worth $3.4 billion, so I'm confused.
James, well, go ahead, David.
Thank you, first of all, about the moderator thing. I've actually suggested that Hugh Hewitt and I should be the questioners, because then each candidate could absolutely live in terror of the questions they were going to get.
Oh, I would watch that, David.
We would give both of them really tough questions. As to the other point, Forbes magazine's list is highly reliable for publicly traded stock and other publicly traded securities. For everybody else, it's nonsense. When I wrote in one of my books that there Forbes listed one billionaire where I live in Rochester, New York, in all of Western New York, and I said there were seven, I had two prominent Rochesterians separately take me to lunch, ask who I thought the seven were, and they both said, no, you've missed two others. There were nine billionaires in Western New York, but it was private money, so Forbes had no record. Forbes attributes a lot of money to goodwill for Trump's properties. And I think he seriously damaged that goodwill. Cadillac withdrew from the Doral PGA tournament. No one else would sponsor it. And so the PGA, putting their thumb in Donald Trump's eye, moved that part of the schedule to Mexico, of all places.
James, thanks for the call to Radio Times. David, I'm looking at a list of questions that you printed out in the New York Daily News Monday, September 26th. And question number two is, I guess this is to Donald Trump. If you have said that if you became president, you would stop Ford, Nabisco, and other companies from building factories in Mexico. What gives a president the power to tell private businesses where to build? And how would you react if President Obama had told you not to put your name on hotels and golf courses as you have in the Middle East? Just as an example of one of the questions that you thought should have been asked at the first debate.
Right. I think the questions that we're asking aren't telling people the things that they need to know about both candidates. I mean, I'm not impressed with any of this. The problem with the debates, they're not debates, it's kabuki theater, is they pick television personalities who have their own concerns about, you know, how big their multimillion dollar paycheck's going to be. And that is the kind of money those people make, not working journalists. And they're not going to ask the questions that would rile up any group of voters and press them the way that they should. Frankly, I'd rather just have the two candidates go on stage and go at each other with no rules whatsoever. I think we'd learn more if we did that.
Let me see what Ed from Mount Airy has to say. Ed, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. So I admire David's work, and I have this question. You've said that, you know, Trump does not understand the IRS code.
Right.
I also don't think he really understands how tariffs work. Could you, just taking the example he's said in debates about, you know, if a car company moves their plant to Mexico, he would then impose some prohibitive tariff. I think he's mentioned 35% in bringing the product back into the United States. So could he legally even do that, number one? And number two, how, if he did that, you know, across the board, he's also threatened China that way. How would that actually affect the American economy? Would it create a trade war? What would be the effect?
That's a great question. First of all, Congress controls taxes under the Constitution, not the IRS, not the president, Congress. Donald Trump could get Congress to do this, except for one thing. No legislation moves unless the speaker moves it. And Donald Trump has gone out of his way to pick fights with Paul Ryan, the speaker, which tells you he doesn't understand how government works. If you listen to Trump, he talks like the president is a dictator. And I've actually written a column about when he said that he would get rid of our current generals that he holds in very low esteem, despite the evidence of remarkable success, with too many innocent people dying, but nonetheless remarkable success in finding and killing the leaders of Al-Qaeda and ISIL. And he said he would appoint new generals. Well, we have thousands of years of history that the first indication that someone is going to replace a republic with a dictatorship is you fire those general officers loyal to country and replace them with craven officers who are loyal to the man. And Donald Trump at great length has said his entire business philosophy is based on absolute unquestioned fealty and loyalty to him personally.
Ed, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me read a part of an email from Kevin who says, given Trump's record, I'm curious why anyone or any bank would still loan him any money, knowing they likely wouldn't be paid back. We touched on this earlier, but can you expand on that, David?
Sure, and that's very easy to explain. I owe 8% of the value of my house. My bank has an absolutely risk-free loan, because if I stop paying, and even if I used all my legal knowledge to tie them up for 10 years, they will get all their money, all the interest, all the legal fees out of my house. Donald Trump's loan for his hotel in Chicago is such a small fraction of its value that it's a risk-free loan. And that's the only kind of loans he's been able to get since he, as he publicly said, I borrowed money knowing I wouldn't have to pay it back. That strikes me as an admission of fraud. I didn't intend to pay them back. I don't think you could prove that in a court of law, but as a practical political matter, I think Donald Trump has declared there that he's for fraud.
You mentioned the Bank of China. Is he going to either banks or organizations outside the U.S. to get support, get financial support?
Yes, and this is one of the most troubling aspects of Donald Trump. It's a business entity he's invested in that owes money. His presidential financial statement did not require him to disclose all sorts of foreign entanglements. He has deals with Middle East potentates, with the Communist Chinese, an extensive 30-year track record of deals with the Russian oligarchs, who have been the source of, he himself and one of his sons says, a disproportionate share of his business. He was paid a grossly inflated price for a piece of property by one of these oligarchs. And you'll notice that just as Donald Trump went out of his way to assure the major drug trafficker, Joe Wechselbaum, that he was his friend and not his enemy, he was loyal to him, he could trust him for reasons we don't know, every time Vladimir Putin's name is mentioned, Donald Trump immediately expresses his admiration and respect for Vladimir Putin. That should be, like, really troubling to people. I mean, anybody who's listened to or read tapes of where the FBI or local law enforcement has gotten mobsters surreptitiously recorded, that's how they talk about the mob boss. They're constantly making sure that nobody hears them say anything except their fealty and loyalty. I mean, imagine if Barack Obama, running for president, had simply said, you know, I got to admire Vladimir Putin's style. What Fox News and the right wing in America would have said about that. This is extraordinary and it should be deeply troubling. And I don't think we really have a clue about how deeply Donald Trump is entangled with the Russian oligarchs, all of whom owe their fortunes to their continued fealty to Vladimir Putin.
Does that tell us something about Manafort, who was his campaign manager for a while?
Yes. Yes, he went, and Paul Manafort is a guy whose reputation was the lobbyist for the sleaziest, most murderous dictators around the world, and Trump brought him in to run his campaign. Then he got rid of him, but he brought him in. And we now know from records that have been leaked that Manafort got vastly more money than he wanted us to believe that was stolen from the people of Ukraine. Trump, you know, has denied that Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine. He took over Crimea. He has troops in the Ukraine. We now have accidentally released documents that show the Russians did this, and yet Trump denies it. And by the way, Marty, if a map were put up tomorrow, a Sunday night, with an outline of the world, and somebody in the audience said, could you please point to us where Crimea is? Trump couldn't find it. He doesn't know where these things are. If you asked him where Nigeria, one of the most important oil-producing countries in the world, is, where is it? He wouldn't be able to find it on a map. He couldn't tell you where South Sudan is.
You know that?
I'm totally confident of that because of all the things that I show in the book where Donald Trump is asked questions under oath or in radio interviews, and he doesn't know the answer. The portion of the making of Donald Trump just about the nuclear triad and what you didn't see on TV but happened earlier should absolutely scare people about what Trump doesn't know about nuclear weapons. Remember, this is a man who is mused about, why don't we use nuclear weapons in Europe? All of the European countries are our friends.
Let me ask
Never mind the insanity of using nuclear weapons.
Let me ask you about, if Donald Trump becomes president, and this, of course, the possibility of that, he said he would put his businesses or his business operations in a blind trust to be run by his children. Does that trouble you?
Yeah, because that's meaningless. Blind trusts are used where you have stocks and bonds and real estate investment trusts, and then the trustee can buy and sell and trade them, and you don't know what they are. And we give you a special break, by the way, if you're in that position. You don't have to pay capital gains taxes when your property is moved around, which is reasonable given that you're doing public service. But in Trump's case, he has contracts he can't get out of that deeply entangle him with governments in the Middle East, contracts that we don't even understand and that he doesn't have to disclose with the Russians. He is a material witness in this $250 million alleged tax fraud that's currently in the courts that traces through one of the corrupt Icelandic banks to a Russian oligarch. You can't undo his business dealings the same way you can as George W. Bush simply gave everything to Northern, I think it was Northern Securities, and put it in a blind trust. And you can't do that with Trump's business dealings at all.
So it's
a serious national security question.
Looking ahead, and you've got this book about how to reform the tax code or our tax system for the 21st century. In a nutshell, David, what should we do?
We need to have a radically simplified tax code that does not require you to file a tax return, that eliminates the estate tax, but at the same time make sure that all gains are ultimately taxed, either during your lifetime when you withdraw money from your investment accounts to spend it or when you die. And we need a tax system that requires far fewer audits. I replace our current system with a privatized system, and I also get rid of the corporate income tax. But you can't just repeal it. The economy would collapse if we just repealed it for reasons Congress laid out in 1909. What I do is replace the corporate income tax with a device that makes sure that companies reinvest in business, either through paying their workers more, paying dividends to their shareholders, or investing directly by things like building new factories and buying more equipment.
I remember back when Mitt Romney and others were running for president. I think it was Newt Gingrich, who was running against Romney at the time, talked about vulture capitalism, the idea of buying a company, kind of bleeding it dry, and then selling it. Is this a form of vulture capitalism?
Yeah, what we've done in our tax code is we've encouraged investment in unproductive investments, real estate, art, things like that. And at the same time, we've encouraged stripping the meat off of operating companies and taking the cash away from them and in the process destroying jobs. I call this the prosperity tax because its goal is to encourage savings, encourage investment, provide better services for children and take them out of the tax code and treat children in a whole different way so we invest in our future in a much more efficient way. And the problem, we can't fix our current tax code because it was designed for an era that doesn't exist anymore. We actually have everybody in the world I've interviewed traveling the world and talking to tax officials, a really great tax system in America for 1960.
For 1960.
We don't live in that economy anymore. And this would be the fourth time we've created an entirely new tax system in America. We don't teach people that we specifically founded this country, the United States of America, under the Constitution, to grant Congress the power to tax and to regulate commerce, which is a form of tax. That was the purpose of our Constitution. And so this book I'm doing will explain that history and show how we can have a tax code that is our servant and not our destroyer.
David K. Johnson, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Joining us by Skype, author of The Making of Donald Trump and the book that he's working on now, The Prosperity Tax, an entirely new federal tax code for the 21st century economy. And again, a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter has written for the New York Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Los Angeles Times. He's now a columnist for the Daily Beast and Investopedia. I finally said that word correctly. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for joining us.